Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Comic-Con Stars. It is good to be here tonight. We've got our crew for you tonight. Anyway, this is Dr. John. Thanks for listening in. First of all, we will do a couple of updates. This weekend, we've got the Sumter Comic-Con coming up in Sumter, South Carolina at the Sumter Civic Center. And we've got, when we look down the schedule, we have I'm so used to saying Steampunk Mid-Atlantic. We have Cape Fear Comic-Con on August the 12th. And on August the 20th, Sunday, we are all in Charlotte, North Carolina for the one and only Charlotte Comic-Con. And Papa Stro, you will be a guest at the Charlotte Comic-Con, correct?
Absolutely. Got it confirmed a few days ago. I'm really excited to get back to Charlotte and see everybody there. It's going to be a great, great time. So I look forward to it.
Oh, we're going to have a lot of fun. I'm going to be about 150 feet away in the dealer room, and you'll be out there with all the stars just like you should be. So it's going to be a blast. So we got you, the one and only Dave Atwell. Are you available, Dave? I see his number.
Yes, sir. I am sneaking in under the radar, so I'll mute out when the racket starts. But, hey, a lot of fun this weekend at Steampunk Mid-Atlantic. If you weren't there, you missed out on a lot. I'm going to tell you, John, you threw one heck of a bash there, young man. Very proud of you.
It was a party to be sure. Before we get to our guest tonight, I just want to do a little bit of recap and wrap up. We had a good crowd at Steampunk Mid-Atlantic in Raleigh, North Carolina. Featured star was Papa Stro Maestro. Along with him, we had a couple, Will Williams, a movie star and actor. We had Rob Underhill, a director and producer. I'm just going down the list. We had Teresa Jane from A-List Casting. We had Dean Jones came by, who's a film director from Burlington, North Carolina. Anthony Dowling of Eno River Media, he was there. And we had about 45 vendors, had some incredible crafts and arts, and had a good time. We had a costume contest, which was won by none other than Mississippi McQueen of the group Tornado Bait. Papa Stro, Mississippi's pretty much an individual, isn't she?
Very much a charismatic personality. I told her at the Steampunk Mid-Atlantic that she should be a comedian, hands down, because she is so funny and humorous and just a bundle of joy to be around. So yeah, it was really great meeting her and along with everybody at the Steampunk Mid-Atlantic. So much great talent, so many cool things. My goodness, some things I've never seen before. It was amazing.
Yeah, we had the Blibbering Humdingers. They're a steampunk band. They entertained us from 6:30 to 8 p.m. on Saturday night. On Sunday, we had Antler Hill, Neil Griffin, and his wife. We had a marvelous time with them. Neil and his wife are going to be on with us in a couple of weeks. We're going to do a larger feature on them, not just listen to one song tonight. So we are really looking forward to having them. I want to say, first of all, congratulations. We had the Up All Night Film Festival. Awards were given. The following films won awards: Son of Clowns, The Carrington Event, No Child, Dusk, and Goodman. Those films won awards. Now, I am pleased to be speaking to one of the distinguished actor recipients. Congratulations, Papa Stro Maestro.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. It was really humbling and a huge honor to receive the awards the other night at Up All Night Film Festival in front of some of the best cast and crew of the film industry in North Carolina. And, you know, being around your friends and peers and people you worked with, it was a big honor and it was very overwhelming. Really, really very much appreciated.
Well, you are certainly welcome and congratulations on a great role and a great part in Son of Clowns. We just thought we all had a lot of fun. And Up All Night, we'll be back. We will be in Wilmington, North Carolina on Saturday night after the Cape Fear Comic-Con. We will be showing films, some of the ones we had here, and maybe a couple more. So we're looking forward to it, and we'll have some of the stars. Of course, we are looking forward to hopefully showing a second episode of Vaughn. Now, Vaughn, the sitcom, won an award, and of course, Vaughn Wilson and Ryan Williams won Distinguished Actors, along with Will Williams of No Child. So we had some good winners, some good films, and a lot of fun. So I want to thank everybody for being there. Dave Atwell, you were there with one of your books, and you met a lot of good friends and got a lot of good press. So I think the Comic-Con Stars crowd did pretty well. I'm proud of all of you, and I'm glad to be a part of Comic-Con Stars with you two guys. So thanks a lot for being there, and we'll see you. Now, the next event in Raleigh will be the Steampunk Music Festival. That will be on Saturday, October the 7th. At the Ramada Inn on Blue Ridge Road, and we'll have the Blibbering Humdingers, we'll have Tornado Bait, we will have Antler Hill. We might have one other band as well. We'll also have Brett King doing his brand of steampunk humor. It's going to be a lot of fun. So I encourage everyone in the Raleigh area to join us again, and we'll keep moving along. Now, tonight, one of our guests is Alan Braswell from our friend from Swainsboro, Georgia. Alan, how are you doing tonight?
Doing good. How's everybody else?
Well,
Alan,
how about you, Papa?
How's it going?
Yeah, we're all here having fun. Now, here's the deal. We were also going to have Darnell, who's a boxer, an accomplished boxer.
An update on that right now. He has just texted, and he had lost the number, and he is calling in.
And I see him calling in from 727. What 727 number is this, Darnell Brooks?
Yes, sir. What's going on, fellas?
Hey, Darnell.
Hey, we got him now.
Welcome to the show. To have you.
No doubt, man. It's a pleasure.
Well, thank you for being here with us.
Huh?
Little information on Mr. Boone. Anybody that knows boxing knows Darnell Boone. This guy has fought everybody. The current WBC light heavyweight champion, Adonis Stevenson, fought him twice. Knocked him out the first time.
Yes, sir.
He's fought Andre Ward, the first man to knock down Andre Ward. Fought Sergey Kovalev twice. And a lot of people thought he won the first fight. Darnell, am I correct? You knocked him down four times in that first fight.
It was three legit. Could have been four, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, the first one, it was like kind of a slip off the rope. But, you know, normally they would say if the ropes will hold you up, that's a knockdown. So, you know.
Right.
They call it how they call it.
Yeah. Yeah, I knew.
After three knockdowns.
They said they were. I've seen a lot of knockdowns where, I mean, they call them slips, but you know it wasn't a slip. I've never seen Kovalev slip around that much.
No doubt.
It had to have been something on Darnell's in his hand that made him slip around that much.
You know it. You know it.
Perspiration.
Alan, that's a great comment. It really is. Now, Darnell, I want to start it off, and then I've got a distinguished panel. First of all, in case you have not met Papastro Maestro, he is a very accomplished professional wrestler. He's been trained by the best in the business, and he's also a mixed martial arts practitioner. He has studied all over the world. So you got somebody that speaks your language, and I'm so glad we do. So, and of course, we've got Dave Atwell, the author, and Dave Atwell, who has never been at a loss for anything to say, especially when it has to do with something that I've said. He always can have a comment, so that's great. To get started, Darnell, tell us a little bit about you and your background, and then everybody, let's get in. We're gonna have a good time with Darnell. I'm so glad you're on tonight. So, Darnell, tell us a little bit about your story,
how it all happened, and how did you get to today?
Oh man, I actually started fighting late. My little brother, I had moved out of my mom's house early. And my little brother came to my house, and he was crying that didn't nobody would take him to practice. So I'm thinking he's playing football or something. You know, by me being out and about in the streets or whatever, you know, I'm thinking he's playing football for the teams. I know where all the teams they play at. So I asked him what team he play for. He said, no, I box. You know, me being a big brother, I'm like, you box? He said, yeah. I said, where you been boxing at? And he pointed to where the gym was at. And now I've been riding past this gym like umpteen times. Like, and I never knew it was a boxing gym. But I would see guys out there jump roping and stuff like that, but I never knew that it was a boxing gym. So I said, you know what, I'm going to take you to the gym tomorrow. So I went into the gym, you know, and he wrapped his hands up or whatever, and he started working out. So when he got done, you know, I guess I fell in love with the atmosphere, like, instantly. And when we was about to walk out, I asked the trainer, I said, let me spar with somebody. He started laughing at me, asked me, did I really want to spar with somebody? I said, yeah. So long story short, I kept picking with him about working with somebody. So he told me, mm-hmm. who do I want to work with? I scanned the gym, and I said, well, give me him back there. You know what I'm saying? The guy, he was the biggest one in the gym. So I'm like, give me him. Everybody like, no, don't. He the best one in the gym. So I said, no. I said, the only thing that's going to happen is either he going to whoop me or I'm going to whoop him. I said, I can actually fight. He said, you know how many people come in here, they tell us that we got to wipe them off and send them out of here. I said, no, I got to really fight. So I kept bothering him because he walked off away from me, you know, laughing. And I'm like, okay. So when we was about to walk out the door, I said, what's up? You going to let me work with somebody? So he was like, he told him, he said, Kel, suit up. So when he suit up, I suit up. I said, about, so we start off. And about a round, a half a round in, I'm talking about dude beating me from corner to corner.
Mm.
And at the end of the sparring match, the guy he gave me a hug. He said, "Man, you got a lot of heart. You'll do good in this sport."
Mm.
And the guy that I was sparring with was Kelly Pavlik. He was about to fight for his first world title at the time. He was 22-0 with 22 knockouts.
Mm.
And wow. I've been boxing ever since that day.
That's awesome. Did not know that story. That's amazing. Kelly Pavlik, the great middleweight champion.
Right.
So both of y'all are Youngstown, Ohio boys.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I came out of the gym with them, man. I learned a lot from Kelly.
Youngstown, Ohio.
Mm, yes, sir.
I fought a few boxers. Ray Boo Boo Mancini.
Boo Boo Mancini.
Yeah, I know him.
Yep.
Yeah, I know. Boom Boom. I know Harry Royal.
Yep.
Well, mainly all the fighters that came out of Youngstown, I mainly know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because
well, you
Ray
know what?
Boom Boom Mancini's in the Boxing Hall of Fame now, I believe.
Right.
He was inducted a few years ago, I believe. Yeah. You know, that kind of microcosm your career, because you've always fought the toughest guys out there. Whether
right.
it was on short notice, whether you had time to train, you would get in the ring with anybody. And that's
right.
why I think so many people respect you in the profession.
Well, once I got rolling, I always felt that if you wanted to be the best, you had to fight the best. I mean, a lot of times it wasn't by choice where I had to fight these guys. It was, you know, the people that was handling me at the time, you know, they say, well, I think you can beat this guy. And you know, I trusted his word. If you think I can beat this guy, let's go get it.
Yeah. I know. Darnell also has been in three camps with Gennady Triple G Golovkin.
Yes, sir.
Who has a big fight coming up against Canelo Alvarez in September. And he was handpicked by Gennady, as a matter of fact. I saw a YouTube video of Abel Sanchez, and he said it was Gennady's choice to bring in Darnell.
Right.
So he was handpicked by Triple G himself.
Yes, sir. We got
well,
great work in too, man. I like working with Triple G.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. I wanted to say that there's a big parallel from what you just said about coming out of Youngstown and having so many great fighters and learning from them and your success and the success of those others. Papa Stro, that sounds like you and Charlotte, North Carolina, doesn't it?
Sounds like me in a lot of towns. I've been in quite a few towns, and had some good moments there in Youngstown, Ohio, actually. Some great moments
really?
Up there at Way, too. So, oh, yeah.
Who'd you end up
wrestling
up there?
There in Cleveland and Dayton and all that. Great time. Columbus, you name it.
Yeah, I guess I was saying, I know you got trained in Charlotte, and there were so many great wrestlers that came out of the Charlotte area. So just, in that way, it's a little parallel.
Yeah, that was during the NWA days, Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, and they're affiliated with a lot of affiliate territories around the country. So it was pretty much the era where everybody kind of came together from different parts. So yeah, it was really cool, and it was a great place to get things started, you know.
Absolutely. Now, Darnell, what have you got going on? What are you looking forward to doing as you move forward in your career? What have you got coming up, and where do you look to go? Who do you really want to fight over the next 6 months, 9 months, and a year?
Well, I want to fight anybody at the top of the bracket. You know, it don't matter which one. You know, if they got ranking, they got belts, and the money comes, it's going to come in the process, but – you know what I'm saying? I want to fight whoever. It don't matter to me. I'm ready to make a statement, and I feel like in my career so far, I done did everything to get me recognized, so these guys should give me my shot.
And nobody deserves it better or deserves
Thanks,
it
man.
More. I mean, because let's face it, you fought – how many – have you ever counted up how many current or former world champions you fought or sparred with?
No, well, everybody always they put up like the stats to like of my actual record and who was undefeated and stuff like that. But I never
mm-hmm.
really did it my own self.
Because I know Stevenson's a current champion. Ward's
right.
a current champion.
Right.
Kovalev just was a current champion. Jean Pascal was a former champion. So that's four or five, right? You spar with Gennady, he's a current champion.
Right.
So
yeah, I fought it was Landy Lara. I think he's a champ right now, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah, so that's five or six current or former champions right there. When you
right.
sparred Kelly Pavlik, you said. So that's maybe seven right there. So,
right.
I mean, you've been in there with the best. I mean, there's no doubt about that. And,
yeah,
you know,
I never was really afraid of the work. I always wanted to work with the guys that were better than me.
Yeah.
Right.
I was telling John something the other day. It was funny having a wrestler and a boxer together. Especially the wrestler we have on tonight, because I've read a lot on Muhammad Ali, and Ali basically said that he got his little act of self-promoting from Gorgeous George,
right?
The famous wrestler in the 50s,
mm-hmm.
and
my granduncle,
and Maestro. Is related to Gorgeous George.
That's up.
That's right. Maestro, tell us a little bit about some of the other great personalities. I know you and I talk about this all the time, but tell us some of the other great personalities that learned at the feet of Gorgeous George, who really is responsible for getting wrestling into homes in the 50s and early 60s.
Oh, but Gorgeous George back in the day influenced so many people, not just in wrestling, but in Hollywood mainstream and sports and so many personalities back in the day. I've talked to James Brown, Godfather of Soul, when he was still alive, and he was telling me how much Gorgeous George influenced him with his music and his and flamboyantry and everything. And same thing, Muhammad Ali and Nature Boy Ric Flair and so many others through the years that been inspired by Gorgeous George, you know, with their style and the way they present themselves. So, yeah, it's amazing how things kind of intertwine together, you know, not just with the wrestling and boxing, but like with entertainment and everything. It just all, it makes the world a smaller place.
It does, and Gorgeous George could generate some heat unlike anybody's business, couldn't he?
Oh, yeah, and, you know, and we're talking about the great late Muhammad Ali. I mean, he had the gift of gab, and he could talk, like, give promos like no other before him, and he was just, he set the bar pretty much as far as the boxing world goes. So it's like, yeah, you know, it's just amazing how people influence each other over the years like that.
Yeah, I've read that Ali said he took his little act straight from Gorgeous George. Said, you know, the predicting the knockouts and talking before the fight and all that to hype the fight. He said he stole that basically all from Gorgeous George.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think Muhammad, as a person, was quite, relatively a quiet person. He wasn't mouthy like that all the time. He done
right.
That before the fights.
Yeah,
and
I talked
you know,
to a lot of people myself that said he was a real good guy.
Right, right. Well, it was
yeah.
Like a lot of us in the entertainment industry and sports industry where, you know, we we're real low key, but when it's time to turn it on, we turn it on. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So, you know, no doubt.
That's right, Papa Stro. You know how to wrap someone up in the ring apron and beat them up, don't you?
Well, I was just blessed to be taught by some great people. Is all you know. Just carrying on what they started.
That's right, you know, because it's great having a great wrestler and a great boxer on here, and we just think of the boxers that made their mark in wrestling, whether it was being a referee or whatever. I know the great Joe Louis was so well respected. What a great boxer, and he was up there in Detroit at you know refereeing wrestling matches. Just was such a huge hero to people, and the crossover is inevitable. So, now, Darnell, one reason that we got to talking to you tonight is because you have employed Alan Braswell's son to do some things for you. Can you tell us a little bit about those?
Yeah, I actually had him make a like the gladiator helmet, which I like. I like it a lot. You know, it kind of give you the picture of, like, of my persona, you know, or how I feel. And that's why I like each mask that I wear is like a different emotion. So when I come out, whatever mask I come out of, that's how I'm feeling at that time. So, you know, with the gladiator thing, I want to show, you know, that warrior in me, you know, that I bring mm-hmm. out. And I'm actually going to wear it in my next fight whenever I do have my next fight.
That's awesome.
Well, actually, boxing is modern-day gladiators.
Oh, yeah.
Well, some of them, they be running scared, man. A lot of them is babies. They used to be gladiators.
Yeah.
But, you know, right now, this day and age, it's all about making the money and keeping that oath. So, you know, a lot of guys, they don't want to fight the dangerous guys. Or they don't want to – It's like they don't want to be the best no more. They just want to see who makes the most money. You know,
what I feel
in my heart is.
What do you think about this Mayweather-McGregor fiasco?
Me, personally, I think it's a stupid fight. I mean,
yeah.
But, you know, both of them will make – they. I don't care how much money they make off of it. It's stupid. One guy is a boxing genius, and one guy having boxed a day in his life. So
exactly.
What
I mean, how many people have you ever heard of that's making $127 million for their debut fight?
Right.
For their first fight.
I mean, it's crazy, man. It's actually a slap in the face to both sports, if you ask me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a win-win for Conor McGregor, but it's not really going to do nothing for Floyd but make him a bunch of money.
Right.
I mean, because what's McGregor got to be scared of? He's going to go in there and get slapped around for 12 rounds or maybe less, and he's going to come out with $127 million, which is a lot more than he can get paid in the UFC.
Right.
We'll do like he did
so
in the UFC.
He had a win-win.
Walk around funny.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I'd get slapped around for $127 million any day.
Yeah, he basically
well,
just getting paid
what,
to show up.
What's going to be bad is that I don't think McGregor is going to be able to keep that thing clean. I think somewhere down the line, he's going to slip and slide a knee in there or an elbow or something to that effect, and that'll be the linchpin for the excuse. Yeah.
Pull out a gimmick like you do in wrestling. You'll try to pull a wrestling finish and pull out a gimmick. And
yeah, it's no longer a foreign object. It's an international object.
Right.
Remember, it's got to be politically correct, right?
Yeah.
That would be fun. At least it would make it interesting.
That's going to be crazy.
Yeah, because McGregor's going to get tired of just getting outboxed and slapped around. I mean, he's going to get his feel of that. You just wonder how long is it going to take him to get his feel of it.
Unless he's actually working on something and he looking good.
My God,
we never really seen him, you know, just box. I mean, in the UFC, yeah, but you know, by him being obsessed with himself, he may be able to learn in this time because this was a lot of time, you know, to get ready. So we'll see what this obsession get him. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Boxing.
I saw a interview with Freddie Roach, and he had Conor McGregor in his gym in the wild cards working out.
Yeah.
And he said Mayweather came to him and said, look, Freddie, you need to train Conor because you're going to make a lot of money out of this because this fight's going to happen. And he said he just looked at him and started laughing, and he said, Floyd said, it would take me 5 years to get him ready for the ring, much less you. And Mayweather just laughed and walked off like he knows. I mean, he knows there ain't no use in doing it. So I mean, Freddie said his amateurs is beating up McGregor.
Right. And, I mean, like I said, it's a win-win for McGregor. I mean, even if he lands a punch or a couple punches, that's a win for him because he's not supposed to land on him. You know, I mean,
yeah,
it's
I
a
know.
Fight, but, you know, but a UFC fighter, a guy that do three or four different, you know, arts in one fight, yeah, I mean, but now you're taking everything away from you and now you just got to focus on one.
Right.
You know,
I remember Rocky
like
Johnson.
Have you guys,
so DeRock
have you guys seen the
one
inside
time
of
me
McGregor's
time
gym?
He went to have an amateur wrestling match, and he got disqualified because he threw a drop kick on him.
Wow.
He did a wrestling match. He got disqualified.
on the inside of McGregor's gym, he's actually had a mural painted of him busting old money in the mouth. Google it, because, I mean, the thing is huge. God knows how much he paid for it to be painted on the inside of his gym. But it looks like something off a Rocky movie. It's funnier now.
Wow.
Well, that's probably about as close
oh, man.
As that's going to come to happening.
But here's the thing with it, and I'll be honest with you. I think it's going to be, and you hit the nail on the head earlier, I think it's going to be a black eye on the sport of boxing in itself, because it's apples and oranges. It's two totally different sports trying to come together. It's almost like an ice hockey player and a field hockey player trying to play together. And
right.
And mm-hmm. I'll tell you personally from experience, you got me twice, but you won't give me a third time. I paid full price for the Mike Tyson comeback fight, which was a joke.
Right.
And then it was my birthday. I had a good couple amount of alcoholic beverages in me, and on the spur of the moment, I got the Pacquiao Mayweather fight, which turned out to be like going to the prom, because all they did was hug and dance the entire 15 rounds. And I got a feeling that's what this fight's going to be. It's going to be a swing, swing, miss, miss, hug, hug. I just see it being a circus. And Will posted something on Facebook the other day about what's your opinion. And I said, I think it's going to be the sports world version of the Suicide Squad.
I think McGregor's going to walk around the ring, prancer in the ring like he did the dancers from the Nutcracker, basically, like he usually does with his MMA fights.
Yeah.
And pray Mayweather doesn't punch him.
Right. But me personally, I don't think he's going to really do much.
Mm-hmm.
Say, I know Mike Tyson and Max Kellerman has both said they didn't think that he would land a punch on Mayweather.
Right, right,
yeah.
Both of those guys have stated, I've seen posts where they stated they didn't think McGregor would land a punch.
You know, and that's what I'm saying. So if he do land a punch, it's like a win-win. So when he get knocked out or it go to rounds, he'll be like, hey, well, at least I hit him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then he gonna walk away with $100 million. So hey.
Yeah.
Like I used to say about Mike Tyson, you fight Mike Tyson, you get paid $25 million. I'll do that. It won't be the first time I've run from a big black guy for a little while. I mean, 3 minutes, yeah, I can do it. I've done it before. No sweat, man. Even if he does knock me out, $25 million will pay for a lot of teeth. Bring it on, man, you know?
You'll take one for the team,
yes,
right? You're taking one for the team.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm glad to see Mike in a good place now. He actually, on shows I see him on now, he actually looks like he's settled down a lot and changed his ways a lot, and he actually acts like he'd be a cool dude now.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Man. It's good to see Mike. Because Mike, I think genuinely he's got a good heart, but he fell in with a bad crowd. And to be honest with you, that, not to get totally off on a tangent, but that whole stuff he pulled time for, unlike a lot of other celebrities out there that went into hiding or rode around in A.C. Cowling's vehicle and all that kind of stuff, Mike stood up and said, hey, I didn't do it. We got it on, but I didn't rape her. And, without going into the whole thing, here's somebody who went up to the room at the champ's room at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
If
I go up to the champ's room
at 3 o'clock in the morning, chances are I'm going to be in trouble, you know, so. Don't put yourself in that situation, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I'm not going up to any room with Mike Tyson at 3 a.m. Yeah.
It happens to the best of us.
Yeah, she knew why she was going up there, and then they found out she had done that, cried rape a couple more times on guys. So she was doing that, so she knew she he had money.
And we all saw the hangover when the tiger got gone, and Mike said, "Hold on, hold on, this is my favorite part.
I can feel it coming in the air tonight."
Now sing the chorus.
Oh man!
But if you ever get a chance to watch, go ahead.
Huh?
You said what?
Darnell, have you ever met Mike?
Yeah, I met him one time when I was a small boy, man. I was a teenager, but I never met him like beside that.
Okay.
I know that thing he's doing now, that life story of his where he goes on stage and talks about his growing up and everything. If you ever have a chance to watch it, do it.
I watched it on TV before.
I've got a copy of it.
And you can't help but love Mike just for being able to do that. He gets right on up there, and that's where I admire the guy, because whether he's been in trouble with the law or just winning championships, the guy has always been honest. You might not like what he says, but the guy has always been an honest shot. And you can't help but admire the guy for it.
I just can't get over him and the pigeons. He loves some pigeons.
I mean, I've read his book, and matter of fact, he's got a new book out right now that's just been released, and it's on the New York Times bestseller list. It's called Iron Ambition. It's about his life with Customato.
No doubt.
And they actually have the book listed under psychology.
No kidding.
It was all the stuff that Cuss instilled in him. And it's just a story of not a fight and just of the knowledge that Cuss instilled in him and how he built his ego up enough to where he could get into the ring to fight. Because when Cuss got him, he wasn't but 13 years old. He was just a kid. And he ended up adopting him or becoming his legal guardian. So he basically, you know, molded Mike into the heavyweight champion of the world.
Right.
Have y'all seen the movie Grudge Match with Stallone and De Niro?
Yeah.
And at the very end, it's got Tyson and Holyfield talking to Kevin Hart. And Kevin Hart's trying to convince Holyfield to fight Tyson again. And, you know, he's saying no to everything. Finally, he said something about if he gives him like so much money, more than Tyson, would he fight? And Holyfield said, yeah, I consider that. And Tyson said, why you son of a... And he knocked out Kevin Hart. Oh, hilarious.
Yeah, I think Tyson is really, really looking at stuff a lot different now than he did back then. A lot of the stuff back then he was taking a little bit too serious, and then some things he wasn't taking serious enough. And now I think he's got everything pretty much squared away as far as what to take serious and what not to take serious.
Yeah, it's like he's having fun. You know, he having fun and he happy.
Exactly.
I think what happened to Mike is that when Cuss was alive, Cuss took care of Mike. And that was probably the first time that Mike ever had anybody looking out for him. So when Cuss died, I could tell you, Robin Gibbons, all of them, were looking to put their fangs in the guy. Don King, all those guys were just ready, and they knew that Mike was kind of lacking the old social skills, if you will, and they just rode that guy on out, and they took his success and they turned it inside out for their own good and got what they could out of it, and then left Mike right there on the curb with nothing. And
right.
I mean, you never hear anything about Robin Givens anymore. Don King, he's still promoting. He's fine. And poor old Mike, you know, here's a guy who had full time and go through bankruptcy and everything. But, yeah, it's just a darn shame because, like I said, I think deep down, Mike is an honest cat.
Well
yeah,
really and truly,
I agree with that.
Out of that whole bunch, I think Mike's doing the best because I don't think – Don has too many fighters right now. And Robin,
I ain't heard nothing about him. Really
Don King hadn't got hardly any fighters anymore, and who knows where Robin Givens is. I mean, she became famous by marrying Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
Right.
So Mike's really come out the other end, and he smells like a rose now.
Right.
But you look at what all he had to go through, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he had a hard life, and then he had Don King in his ear telling him all this stuff, and I remember reading in his book that he charged him $7,000 for towels in one training camp.
Wow.
And
wow.
He would charge him for all this stuff. Like, you know, fighters have complimentary tickets to give out. So he took some people over to Tokyo with him when he fought Buster Douglas. Well, Don ends up putting it on Tyson's bill for their flight, for their tickets, for everything. And he finally realized, okay, Don King is screwing me just like he's done everybody else. Because there was a book called Only in America, and they made it into an HBO movie, which I think Ving Rhames played Don King, and it's a great movie. But
speaking of movies, you remember Devil's Advocate with Al Pacino, where he played the devil?
Yeah.
Well, there's a scene in there where he goes up to Don King, and Don King, they shake hands and hug each other like they're best friends.
Wow.
I'm like, art imitates life, right?
Yeah, in that movie, he basically had Larry Holmes at the time, and he made Larry Holmes fight even though his hands were hurt, and he told him they were hurt, but he said, no, we got this fight, we want to do this, and it was just to make Don King money is what it was. Well, after the fight, Larry ended up with a broken hand. And he goes in there, and he had promised him like $500,000 for the fight. And he went in there and threw like $7,000 on him and said, that's it. He said, man, expenses. And I mean, Larry just blew up on him. And he said, is that it? And he finally told him, he said, look, said, you walked into this dressing room, you want to crawl out of it?
Wow.
So Larry kind of backed down off of him. But then again, Larry was smart enough to split off from him and finish out his career. But he did start his career with Don King, and Don just ripped him a new one. I mean, that was awful. You get promised $500,000. He thought he was going to come in there with a check for $500,000. He come in there with $7,000 worth of cash and just threw it at him. But you know, had on there that. He used to carry around a briefcase full of money. I mean, now this is a black man talks about other black men. He said a black man would rather, a black boxer would rather see $50,000 in a suitcase in cash than a $1 million check.
Wow.
Now that's pretty bad.
Well, I was going to say that's. Yeah, that's not good.
To take advantage of people like that. I mean, and that was his motto. That's why he carried around that briefcase full of money, because he could show it to a fighter and they'd sign with him.
Right.
Whereas these other people would say, okay, I'll cut you a check. Well, Don King had this cash money.
Right.
And he thought to these guys that come straight out of the hood, they would be more impressed by that cash, which I guess I'm not out of the hood, but I'd be impressed with the cash, but I'd also be impressed by a check that I knew that was good, too.
Right.
Well, money does a lot of talking, and I write books, and if I'm looking at a pocket full of ducats, I'm listening. Promises are promises. Cold cash is cold cash, you know what I mean? So, I mean, I get it. It's just, you know, and it's kind of tough because I feel bad for a lot of these guys and kind of comparing the writing world to the sports world. I'm finding out that publishing is a dirty little game, and you bust your tail writing these books, and then you put it over in a publisher's hand. You can go with the big five publishers and deal with them directing every little bit you do, how big the book's going to be, what characters are going to be in it, how many words are going to be in it, when you're going to have it done. But yet they will get you the spotlight. They will get you out there in front of God and everybody. And I see the same thing with the sports world. You got talented players and talented athletes, but it almost seems as if they got to sell their souls to the worst people, you know what I mean, to get to where they want to be, just to follow their dreams. And it's man, it's tough to watch sometimes.
Darnell, have you ever had any bad experiences? I know you probably have.
I had a lot of bad experiences, man, with boxing, man. You know,
yeah,
but I just kind of turned my head from them. And, I mean, but it's been plenty of times where I went off about it, you know what I mean? But, you know, I just kind of let it go and just, you know, instead of getting all full of trouble, you know, I just kind of walk away from it.
Right.
So know that feeling.
Because I know in the long run, you know, it's not really going to hurt me. It's going to hurt them.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Yep.
But I'm
so
sure
when
you've
do we
got
get
a
to
lot
see
of
you
horror
fight again?
Stories.
What would you say?
Yeah, when are we going to see you fight again?
Man, it's kind of up in the air, man. We're going to see who going to get in there with me.
I hear you.
And Darnell, were you going to be able to put that? You were going to be doing a fight in Greensboro. Is that thing going to turn up?
No, that was supposed to have been July 1st, but no, that one they never called me back. So that one's July 1st is this weekend. So no, that one fell out. I guess it fell out as soon as he told me.
Wow.
Yep.
So you know, I'm gonna just train up, and I think I'm gonna probably go to camp with Triple G for the Canelo fight, and then probably fight September.
Now, how much of a strain does that put that on you with training when you don't know who you're going to fight? You know what I mean? I would have to think that there's a specific type of, you know, between watching films and everything. You know, how much harder is it on you as the boxer having to train for an opponent that you don't know versus one that you do?
Well, with me, it's actually like I like it. You know, I like it because I figure, you know, I got so much experience. I figure out a guy within the first minute or two of the first round. You know, I actually get off on having to figure them out. You know, I like the whole process of figuring the guy out.
Yep.
What gets me is sitting for so long. You know, I be like, dang, man, where I'm going to fight? It was like, if I beat a guy that's good, I won't fight 6 months to a year. You know, with other guys, you know, they fight in every 2 months or every 3 months. You know, I never know when I'm going to fight. So that's the part that get me, you know, where, you know, I sit down, sit around, and, you know, get out of shape.
You got to stay in your groove.
Yeah, so.
Yep.
Yeah, then if something will pop up, then I got to rush to get the weight down. You know, so it is what it is. You know, but it's like that when you're one of the more dangerous fighters. So, you know, I just got to, you know, get it in me that, you know, I can actually fight. So guys going to stay away from me. So I know I got to stay ready.
Right.
What, you just sparred with Joe Smith in New York? The guy that just ended Bernard Hopkins' career?
Yes, sir.
How did Joe go, man?
Joe, oh, it was great, man. We worked hard. Joe is a real good guy, man. He's still young, so he still got a lot to learn. But for the most part, you know, I think he's gonna be pretty all right.
Well, I hope he's going to get a chance to go to Triple G's camp because he's supposed to be gearing up. I think he starts training camp in mid-July.
Yeah. But I always, when I get there, it's always probably like 3-4 weeks out, you know, from the fight. So if I do go, I may go like mid-August.
Okay.
You know,
then
stay up. Then stay out to buy like a week before the fight, and then I go home the week before the fight.
Yeah, I know in that interview, Abel Sanchez said he always likes to bring you in at the end.
Right. Yeah, I bring something different to the table.
Yeah.
And
it keeps Triple G on his
toes.
Yeah, they said that they bring you in there because you got all the experience, and you do stuff that the younger guys don't do.
Exactly.
Yep.
And I never know what the guys be thinking, you know, when I go to camp to them, unless somebody show me an interview or they tag me into like the guys talking and stuff like that. But like I never really know what they say. You know, they tell me great work, stuff like that, you know. But, you know, me going through the camps with him, you know, we kind of formed a relationship, you know. So, it's never really just about boxing. You know, it just be like just life in general, you know what I'm saying? We all talk
right.
Like on a personal level, you know what I mean?
I know,
so
I know in that interview, Abel and them seemed really the – like you a lot because
right.
He was talking about, I mean, do you ever get the feeling that if you were with a Golden Boy or Main Events or Top Rank, you might be a world champion right now?
No, it started from the gate after I fought Ward. And even now, I could still be a world champ. I just need a shot, you know, just a fair shake. You know what I'm saying? I need for them to give me time to get ready just like this guy. You know what I mean? And I just need a shot. Just give me a shot. And I take that shot and I shine it.
Well, I was just saying, you know, with a Golden Boy or something like that, you know, their fighters, they pretty much get their pick. So if you were with a Golden Boy or something, you'd be a low-reigning champ right now.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
Because they've got the connections to get the fight. They've got the promotional money. They've got all this. They've got the training money. They've got
right.
the facilities.
Uh-huh.
And if you were with a Bob Arum or with a Oscar De La Hoya or somebody like that, I mean, you know, you would be 10 times yeah, better.
The most thing with me is staying busy. You know, I'm not busy enough. Like, I get the fights, but they so spaced out where I don't get the chance like to get better, you know, as the fights go. So
yeah.
it's like I'm still learning on the job. Like if I fight, it's like I'm going back to the drawing board when I get the next fight.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Even though I'm training and running and everything, I gotta try stuff and work on stuff in the gym, you know,
mm-hmm.
and stuff like that instead of, you know, learning by the fight. I don't mind it, you know, because I'm always trying to learn and perfect my style and my craft, you know, so it don't matter. It's just with me staying busy.
I mean, nobody can question your guts, I mean, and the heart, because you fought these guys in their backyards. It seems
right.
like everybody you fight, it's in their backyard.
Yeah, you know, when it's in their backyard, it's easy to take them. Especially even if I'm winning.
Yeah, Abel brought that up in the interview. He said, I think Darnell just fought an undefeated guy in Canada, knocked him down 3 times and lost, and then he rolled his eyes. Why, how did that happen?
Right.
Wow.
So,
all right.
You know.
Alan, I tell you what, I'm going to break in. We got 2 minutes left. I want to say thank you to everybody, first of all. I want to say, Darnell Brooks, you coming back on our show?
No doubt. Most definitely. Just let me know the time, the place. And I'm there, man.
All right, now.
Hey,
he needs to come on down
to Cape Fear and Wilmington too.
I'm gonna let everybody in on a secret. We do something called the huddle. So after this show's over, I call everybody that's on the show, and we all talk. And what I'm gonna start doing is I'm gonna start writing a paragraph and putting it on ComicConStars.com to let everybody know what's going on. But I'll tell you what, we've got experts on tonight. We've got great people. It has been a lot of fun, and I want to thank all of you. I want to thank Alan Braswell, first of all, for introducing me to Darnell Brooks. Darnell, thank you so much for being here. It's great to have a fighter. Papa Stro Maestro, it's great to have you on here. You're a movie star. You're a wrestling star. You are one of the best in the business. Dave Atwell, can't do without you. Did you know that?
Pleasure, sir.
All right.
Privilege is all mine.
Now, oh, look, we're glad to have you. Papa Stro, tell us now, where are you going to be Saturday?
Sumter, South Carolina for the Sumter Comic and Fan Fest at the Sumter Civic Center.
Exactly. Yeah. We're looking forward to seeing you there. Alan, thank you so much. Dave, thank you so much. Darnell,
absolutely.
You've been a great guest. And I will do the huddle.
No doubt,
everybody
bro.
Gets a call after this. And then I'll put up a paragraph about what the huddle's about. So, look, thanks a lot. We'll see you next week. Alan Braswell and I are working on a special guest for next week, and I'll tell Dave and Papa Stro as soon as we get this secured. So have a great one. Comic-Con Stars is out for the night. We will see you next week, and come see Papa Stro and Dr. John at the Sumter Comic-Con this weekend. Take care, and talk to you later.
God bless you.
Good night, everybody. Be safe.
Bye, fellas.
All right.
Hey, well done,
bye-bye.
Darnell. Good to have you on.
Oh, no doubt, man. Anytime.